Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am the girl the writers forced a romantic subplot with to make up for all the homoerotic undertones, even though we have absolutely no chemistry whatsoever and I'm unimportant to the story. Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I am just a nose full of spiders. Siren Rex Fry. And if you notice my last name just changed, it's because I'm getting divorced. No, really, I am. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture.
And this is a very exciting episode for us today because we have a special guest.
I'm your drunk, overprotective mother who doesn't want you to grow up like the mummified shell of your magic-addicted father, who is always selfish in bed. David Foxglove, Paganheart, Malachi, Maester Seymour of Dungeon, Guadalsalam, Wesley Salee. But you can just call me David.
David! David is one of the co-hosts of our YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations, and my best fucking friend. Oh my god. So I'm super stoked that you're here.
Hi! Hi, welcome, David. We're glad you're here. Today, the three of us are going to be talking about the 2006 homoerotic thriller, The Covenant, also known as an attempted boy version of The Craft.
This film was written by J.S. Cardone, directed by Rennie Harlan, and stars Stephen Strait, insert joke here, Laura Ramsey, Sebastian Stan, Taylor Kitsch, Chase Crawford, and Toby Hemingway.
According to IMDb, The Covenant ranked 5.3 out of 10, super low, and for good reason, and is synopsized as, four young men who belong to a New England supernatural legacy are forced to battle a fifth power long thought to have died out. Meanwhile, jealousy and suspicion threaten to tear them apart. But I personally would describe this film as a bunch of hot people cast solely for their looks, try not to be too gay, while telling a story written entirely around three scenes and just do their best.
Yeah, when you put it like that, it sort of just sounds like all three of us when we were 12. Except for the hot people part. So I really wanted to review this movie because it's one of the few examples of male witches being portrayed in media, and also because it's gay as fuck, even though it's also, like, not gay enough. I find this movie both enjoyable and horrible. The special effects are really great, and yeah, there's definitely some hot guy action going on. However, the script is plagued with toxic masculinity cliches and the attention placed upon the lead romance, solely for the purpose of creating a female damsel in distress, undermines a lot of potential the movie could have had. Mm-hmm.
Mostly, I just thought it had a bunch of really great one-liners that I am happy to just add to my everyday vocabulary.
Oh, tell us one.
How about, my power is greater than yours.
Yeah, that's definitely a David line for sure.
I just use that every day. At work, talking to you.
I was quite the fan of, ooh, witchy.
Also the line, I'm gonna make you my weeach.
Oh my god, I forgot about one.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I said that for, like, a month straight after watching it the first time.
Oh my god.
So, this movie follows a group of young, quote-unquote, warlocks, as they're described on Amazon, that are descendants of the founding families of the Ipswich colony, and surprise, they're witches, kind of. They don't really do, like, spells, like, put any effort into casting spells or anything like that, so much as just, like, yell at each other and telekinetically throw things at each other and, like, jump off of cliffs. There's a whole lot of cliffs. The whole concept of being descended from such and such from Salem or where the fuck ever / you know, Salem is pretty tired at this point, but maybe it felt so innovative in, like, 2006.
This movie, it really did have all the potential of The Craft, but it just feels very, like, rushed and lacking substance. There are some themes and plot points that are really compelling, but it just misses the mark for me in a lot of ways. I might be just a tiny little bit biased, and I know that this would have been difficult to make happen in 06, but it just would have been so much better if they made it gay.
Most things are like that.
Yeah, it just... It
would have been better. Take a note from the new She-Ra, bitches!
It just, it makes the story lose a lot of momentum by forcing that, like, romantic hetero subplot. That being said, I do genuinely think this movie is a love story. I just think you have to look really hard to see that it's a love story between all the boys and Chase. It's like a, it's a witchcraft polycule, and I'm into it.
Well, if it actually had been a gay witchcraft polycule, it probably would have been a better movie.
Yeah.
I would watch that all the time.
Yeah, I would watch that three times in a row instead of, you know, She-Ra, like I have been doing.
I mostly just thought it was really contrived, and basically it was just the same retelling of the story we've heard 100 times, except this time with hot Abercrombie and Fitch models.
Yeah. Yeah. Very that.
Which, I mean, that don't let's not underestimate the value of that. do you know, like, all the lead actors actually were models before getting cast in this movie?
No way.
That's, yeah, no, no, that's for real.
You're kidding. I never would have guessed.
Yeah, no, no, it's for real.
And they all starred in David Dakota movies.
I never would have guessed they branched into the industry because they were pretty. Never in a million years.
Ah, well. So in The Covenant, we also have this really problematic metaphor of witchcraft as substance abuse, which is, you know, not the first time we've seen that or talked about it. It also happens in season 6 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And, you know, I don't like it. You know, we talked a lot about witchcraft as a metaphor in our last episode, which was on The Witch, which you should totally listen to because it's really good. And The Covenant isn't nearly as profound with the witchcraft as metaphor element, like The Witch or The Craft or even Buffy, honestly, but it's still present. So even though this movie isn't exactly a cult classic, like some of the things I just mentioned, it's still really important to call that bullshit out. Witchcraft, drug use thing, like listen, when I'm using drugs involved with my witchcraft, I have it perfectly under control, okay? So I don't need no judgment from Hollywood.
And I can stop anytime I want.
Yeah, anytime. I just don't want to.
Yeah, David, do you have any thoughts about the substance abuse thing? The witchcraft is a metaphor for substance abuse. How do you feel about that?
I feel like that metaphor is incredibly problematic simply because, for me, witchcraft is like an extension of my senses, which is not how I would characterize my drug use.
Yeah.
Which is rampant. My early teens, 12s really, maybe 11s. Anyway, I did a lot of magic and a lot of drugs, and I still do magic.
I love this.
I think there are plenty of ways to show like problematic use of magic without having it have to be like an addiction thing, you know? And the fact that this particular metaphor is something that we see repeated is really offensive in on multiple levels. You know, in our episode, I Set Fire to My Aunt, available wherever you get your podcasts. I briefly mentioned like a personal experience with close family members that has substance abuse problems. And if anything, like witchcraft is the thing that helped protect me from those kinds of situations. For it to be portrayed as a parallel to irresponsible drug use just completely fails to grasp what witchcraft actually is. And I think that's one of the biggest pitfalls of this movie, in my opinion. I mean, there are a lot more, but that's like kind of the one where I'm like, meh, you know?
Yeah. And it is like such a central theme.
Yeah.
To the film. But, you know, maybe there is a kernel of truth in it, since apparently we have like 12-year-old hardcore drug using witches like David here. just out in the world.
Well, listen, here's the thing. I just don't see any logic in equating something that brings you joy, that allows you to experience the world beyond the limitations of your physical senses, as a bad thing. And I don't think that necessarily being addicted to that is a bad thing. It's not a public health crisis, all right? It's magic.
Yeah. I mean, let's just get really into like what the magic addiction does to people in this movie. It like destroys your body. It tears you apart. It makes you like old and crusty.
Yeah.
So, and see, that's the thing. Like maybe even if someone was quote unquote addicted to witchcraft, I mean, witchcraft's purpose is not to destroy your body, it's to build up every aspect of your life. So they just got that 100% reverse complete wrong, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
But even still, live fast, die hard, you know?
I know I will.
I'm just saying, like, if I'm gonna go early, it's gonna be because I did a fuck ton of magic and I got absolutely everything I wanted. Like, reality bent to me and then I died. That'll be my epitaph.
Wow. I mean,
put it on my tombstone, but you're not gonna bury me. I'm gonna get burnt. I'm gonna get compressed into a diamond. So.
And then I'll wear you on a brooch.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And here's the thing. It's the term using that gets me, that's thrown around so much in this movie. It's only called,
yeah,
it's only called magic or witchcraft a couple of times. Every other time it's like, oh, you're using too much. They're not going down into their dad's creepy basement smoking out of crack pipes. It's like,
side note, I would also watch that movie.
Yeah.
Let's go down to our dad's basement and do crack. And be gay. That would be the best gay movie.
That would be...
That would, like, be so gay, yeah, if it were meth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, the movie opens in a way that was pretty common in the early 2000s. Ominous music and text that it forces you to read way too quickly. The text essentially is just exposition, so you aren't totally fucking confused when the actual film starts. And it says...
Can I read it?
Yes.
No one really knows how the power came to be. Not even the Book of Damnation has recorded its beginning. But those who have mastered it have always been hunted.
What the fuck?
This is beautiful.
In the middle of the 17th century. Fucking shut up, folks! Many escaped the brutal witch hunting in England and France by coming to America. As the brutal persecution of those with the power spread throughout Massachusetts, the families of Ipswich formed a covenant of silence. And for 300 years it has kept them safe. Until now.
I don't have words for what that was.
Gorgeous.
I'm a narrator.
Yeah. You reminded me of sort of like the narrator from like the first season of Buffy.
That's exactly what I was trying to channel.
Oh, but like if that guy was like a goblin on speed, like that's what you're doing.
Oh, as soon as that's done, we get this like very 2000s montage of like all these fucking words that we hear a bunch through the film, like ascending and full powers and daddy just like popping up all over the screen. Like just, you know, a lot like your Grindr profile when you're like fresh meat in a new city. Like that's kind of what the beginning of this film is like. And then it's like we fade in and it's like, let's learn the characters' names and then make them fucking jump off a cliff, like 0 to 100, just real quick, you know? Following like an awkward party, we learn the characters' names are Caleb, Pogue, Tyler, Reed, and Chase. We also meet two very boring girls named Sarah and Kate.
Ah, yes, the necessary boring girls. Can I add just right here that even though we just told you there are two women with names in this film does not pass the Bechdel test. It does not at all.
I don't know what that is. What's that? What?
Oh, okay, well, let's talk about it. Okay, so the Bechdel test is a tool for a feminist analysis of media. It's very simple. It was come up with by a comic artist named Alison Bechdel, and she actually came up with it in a comic that she drew and wrote. So basically, to pass the Bechdel test, a movie must contain two women, at least two women, with names, and they must talk to each other about something other than a man.
Oh, that doesn't happen.
Which, yeah, exactly, which you would think is such a simple test for a movie to pass, but I would say at least half of all movies made still to this day don't. The Bechdel test isn't like a be-all end-all of like whether or not the film is feminist, you know? Like, just because it passes it doesn't mean it is, and just because it doesn't pass it doesn't mean it's really anti-feminist. It's just more about like looking at like representation of women in media. And the point is that there are so few women cast in lead roles as opposed to the number of men. And usually they are there as plot devices for the men rather than to be their own characters. Which that absolutely describes what's going on with the women in this movie.
I'm really glad these actors got work. They just didn't need to be there. I'm glad they got the jobs. I'm glad they got paid, but they were not needed. They could have served a different purpose than what they did. They literally could have done anything with those characters, but...
Yeah, I think that Sarah and Kate exist to, one, assure you that the characters are straight, and mm-hmm. two, be damsels in distress, because guess what? They both are by the end of the film. Yeah, so I did look into the names because I wanted to know, like, if the last names they gave the characters had, like, connections to, like, Salem or the Witch Trials or something like
that. I had that thought, too, and I didn't research it because I hate this movie.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, I'm really boring. Like, etymology is my jam. So, most of the names are just names, but not all of them. Caleb's family's last name is Danvers, which is the town just outside of Salem. Sarah's last name is Wynnum, which is also a town not far from Salem and Ipswich. So basically the writers were inspired by geography, I guess. And this has not been mentioned yet, but later we'll learn that one character is descended from John Putnam, and Putnam was the surname of a prominent accuser in the Salem witch trials.
The film is allegedly set in the late summer in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Or how did you decide we pronounce it now? Massachusetts? Massachusetts?
No, yeah, I think that's correct.
Yes.
Massachusetts. Okay, gotcha. Even though it was filmed in Montreal in October, which is so typical. Thanks, America. Actually, Ipswich is about a 25-minute drive from Salem, which is referenced a bit in the exposition. However, Ipswich was never known for having any witch trials or executions.
I feel like that specifically they just did because they were like, oh, it's such a stereotype to set a witch movie in Salem. This isn't Hocus Pocus.
Like, yeah, so instead, let's pick a town 25 minutes from Salem. I don't know. It's kind of interesting, though, because, like, I don't know the etymology of the town. I didn't get that far into it. But Ipswich has the word witch in it, which is kind of interesting.
And on the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I wonder why it got that name, because, like, naming your town after witches is not something that was really done.
There are so many points in this movie, and this is a completely unrelated topic, but just, like, talking about this opening scene where they're all on a beach having a party, all these 27-year-old high school students, none of... there are so many points throughout this movie where the actors' mouths do not match up with the audio at all.
There are. There's a lot of that.
It's... And it starts here, and it's through the whole fucking thing. Like,
yeah, if you go on IMDb, like I usually do when we're preparing for this, and you look at the, like, goofs and trivia, there are, like, so many entries about points in the movie where the audio doesn't match with the lips, like, just so many, that it sort of feels like the contributors just gave up after a while, and they were like, we're never gonna get them all.
These... None of these hot people know how to fucking talk. And also, whenever the boys use magic, they get some, like, serious SPN demon eyes. And, like, plot twist, Dean Winchester shows up at the end and just destroys them. And that is a movie I would watch, preferably on Pornhub.
Like you ever get off Pornhub.
I have switched to a different adult media website as of late because Pornhub sucks now. But... But, I mean, at least it was for a good cause, I guess.
And on the next Witch Bitches review, a scathing insight into porn.
That's actually a really good idea. Do they have witch porn?
Witch porn!
I'd review some witch porn. I would do it, you know, for the artistry of it, obviously.
For the people.
Yeah, for the people. For the audience. I will watch porn. I will. For you.
I will watch all of the porn. Well, maybe not all of it. There's some weird stuff out there.
So, okay. So, getting into the movie. We have, like I mentioned, just, like, so many cliffs in the opening. And I want to tell you all that Ipswich, Massachusetts does not have any cliffs. You know where they do have cliffs? Montreal. Because that's where we are. I don't know if you all know this, but so many American television shows and movies are filmed in Canada. Like,
so many.
Every time you think you're looking at America, it's Canada. Yeah.
Canada just has better scenery.
Canada is the America that America wishes it could be. So, to start off the movie, we have these boys jumping off a cliff because witchcraft means that you are, I don't know, Spider-Man. And then we have this party, and Sarah's all like, oh my god, I'm new here, and all the boys like me. It's just so hard to be me. But then the cops show up to this party because all these, like, drunk 25 to 30-year-old high schoolers are drinking at the beach, which is actually a sand quarry. Yes, like a whole big thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah.
So the party gets busted up by the cops. Boo! And all of our 30-year-old high schoolers have to flee.
Yeah, they flee off into the forest. And we're about to get to one of the only scenes in the whole thing that feels cohesive, in my opinion. So everyone's running to their cars that are parked in the woods for some fucking reason. I don't know. And there's a brief scene where Reed fixes Sarah's car with his magic eyeballs because he really loves the magic.
And, like, Sarah, I mean, come on. She's like, oh my god, I'm new here. I'm so pretty. Like, I already have, like, three guys into me. And, like, oh my god, like, how do you start a car? Like, excuse me, boys. Can you start my car? And, like, you know, my car won't start. And, like, I was just wondering, why did you guys jump off that cliff if your car is parked right next to mine?
Wait, hold on. I totally didn't make that connection. Their car is parked in the middle of the woods with everybody else, but they chose to go up on top of a cliff and just watch everybody first?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Yeah. These guys are weird.
Yeah. Fucking losers. Who hikes?
I actually really like hiking.
They had to go on top of the cliff so they could use in private.
Oh, right.
Yeah. They had to go shoot up their magic.
No, actually, when you put it like that, like, that makes sense. Like, I would totally go do drugs on the cliff before, like, going down to the party.
Before jumping off of that cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, this doesn't really do much for the overall story, except make Sarah a damsel in distress for the first time.
And not the last.
My note is just something to give this boring white girl attention, but now I feel bad about that. But then we get to a car chase with the witches and some cops. And this scene is all like, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when we come for you? And the answer is drive off a fucking cliff.
You will do anything to sing. Like,
literally anything. And it doesn't even have to be well.
No, it doesn't.
The car chase is really dramatic and fun to watch. Then they're about to use magic and make the car fly, and Pogue is like, it's gonna take all of our big dick energy to make sure we don't fall to our deaths. And Caleb's like, hot. And all of their eyes turn black. We get Reed, like, attempting to be iconic by yelling, Harry Potter can kiss my ass!
Listen, I'm okay with that. Like, I feel like that line aged the best.
Yeah.
Of the whole movie. Like, back in 2006, Reed was very anti-turf, you know?
Yes.
He was like, fuck that transphobic wizard bitch. I can make my car fly.
Way to go, Reed.
Yeah.
Honestly.
A true visionary.
That line has been one of the ones that actually stuck with me since the first time I watched this movie, though. So, like, A+ to the writing team in one area, I suppose.
Yeah. No, it's not good at all. It's not. It just resonates. It just resonates. Now.
It hits different now. Yeah.
Do you know what? This literally just occurred to me. It's sort of bothersome. So, in the very beginning scene of this film, we see that, you know, the boys can combine their magic and use their powers together. And you would think that a film about, like, the witchcraft being the thing that connects their families together would maybe have a similar sort of cooperative ending.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't.
No.
It doesn't at all. Because the witchcraft is, like, just another thing they fight about, because that's all men can do, is try to be better than each other, blah, blah, blah. You know, a lot of witchcraft movies involving women have an ending that involves using their powers together, cooperatively. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't possibly have that here.
Yeah, that ended real well in The Craft.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, listen, the original Craft... did not have an ending like that. But, you know, the reboot of The Craft did.
Oh, I still haven't watched The Craft Legacy. Well, so.
Oops.
So thanks for...
Something to look forward to.
Thanks for that. I like spoilers. It's okay. I fucking love spoilers. So, okay, so...
So the boys are like, oh, let's fly off a cliff, because why not? Like, we can just do things like that. Car lands behind another car, and the boys are like... Bye. And they drive away. Like, okay. And the cops are like, whoa.
Like, bamboozled.
Just totally.
What happened?
Goofed.
We love pulling one over on the cops here.
Just completely gooped, goobered all over the place. Cops are like, I don't know what's going on. And, you know, the boys are just like, well, let's just go on our way.
They're like, bye. Bye. Yeah, a little bit out of order, because it's only like 25% important to the story and we're already in the area. The cops find this like random dead guy in a car in the woods, and it gets mentioned over and over and over again through the movie, but we never even learn his name, do we?
I don't think so. I think every time they talk about him, they just say like the dead kid in the woods.
That dead kid.
That yeah. Dead kid.
That's his name. That dead kid.
Right. Even like the provost of the school. Just such a pretentious word.
Oh, yeah.
But like, he brings him up twice, and he's always just like, you heard about your fellow student, you know?
Yeah, like...
What's his name? I've got a lot of students. I don't remember.
Yeah, we don't ever learn his name. He doesn't matter to the story, but, like...
Well, I mean, like, he does, but he doesn't, but he does, but he doesn't.
It's like the person... himself, like, does not matter, but the death of somebody, the death of a student is the important part, not who the student was. And I feel like the writing team knew that, and so they just didn't bother.
Yeah.
You know?
He doesn't need a name.
Why disrespect his legacy with a name?
Yeah, seriously. So, after all of this, Pogue takes Caleb home, and they're all like, see you later, bro. Call me in the morning. No homo. Thanks for that hot motorcycle ride or whatever. And then we get into Caleb's house to meet his mother, the exposition machine. So really, she's only in three scenes of this movie. One where she explains how the magic drug use works, and then at the end where she like sorta does something.
Is it really only three scenes?
She's only in three scenes. Yeah.
Oh.
So basically mom is drunk and upset, and she explains that Caleb is going to ascend when he turns 18. He's going to get all powerful. He's going to turn into a magic addicted prick, and then he's going to like kill himself. And, David has elected to give us a dramatic reenactment.
Okay. So picture it. You're walking into a sumptuous, opulent living room. You just got finished riding on the back of your handsome best friend's motorcycle. You're going upstairs, and suddenly you hear from the chaise, hey! Where you been? You know you're supposed to be home, right? Anyway, I just want you to know, I ain't your dad. And I don't want you to grow up, because you're just going to use witchcraft and die. Okay? And I can't take it, okay? I'm married to a mummy. And I can't have my son go through that. Okay? Anyway.
Oh.
So, like, there's a frozen lasagna in the kitchen. End scene.
Yeah. No, that's basically how it happens.
That's exactly it. That's how I remember.
That's how I remember it.
I have literal tears. Okay. This is the first time in the movie we hear magic referred to as using. And this scene is just incredibly poorly written.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about because I just witnessed it and it was beautifully written.
She's literally just explaining the plot of the movie.
Yeah. Thanks, exposition, Mom.
We then go to the character's school, which is some sort of, like, Xavier's school for talented youngsters. I don't know. It's like a prep school or something, but it makes...
It's a rich white kid's school.
As evidenced by all the rich white kids.
Yeah. Well, and you remember, so there is an undercurrent of classism in this movie, yeah. Because we didn't talk about it, but in the very beginning, the, like, bitch, like, bully girl who also doesn't matter, and I don't think she has a name, she, like
Kira. That's Kira.
Kira. Yeah. Oh, you know, maybe the movie does pass the Bechdel test, because Kira makes fun of Sarah for being poor.
Bechdel test.
Bechdel test passed! I was wrong! Yeah. So yeah, that was like one of the first notes I wrote when I was watching this, was classism. Yeah. Because right away, you know, that bitch is all like, oh, it must have been hard for you to get in here from the public school. Yeah, so basically everybody is rich except Sarah, which gives her this alluring poor outsider aura that Caleb just can't resist.
You know, all of the scenes that are between Sarah and Kate sound like they were written by, like, a straight guy imagining a slumber party.
Yeah, basically.
You know? And then, to remind us that, like, for the first time that this movie is, in fact, not gay, we get a lovely shot of her sun-shaped tramp stamp, even though not a single one of us is interested.
Yeah, not at all. I also read... in the goofs on IMDb that, and I didn't notice this myself, I did not clock this myself, but apparently they go back and forth between covering up her tattoo and not covering up her tattoo.
She also had one in between her shoulder blades too, which is there and then not there.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that either because I didn't care about her.
So what unfolds next is absolute horror movie, toxic masculinity, cliche bullshit.
Yeah.
Sarah is naked in the shower and being threatened by an unseen force, and then the lights go out. Oh my god, shut the fuck up. That wasn't even innovated in 2006, sweetie.
No.
And that unseen force is not poor hygiene, because there is no soap in that shower.
Yeah, and she doesn't wear sandals. It's a public shower.
She's gonna get a fungus, and that's the real enemy.
Yeah, is that the true villain of this... of this whole piece. That's why there's so many fucking spiders.
Yeah. It's their piss poor hygiene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Piss poor housekeeping.
Jesus.
God, these people.
Clean your fucking room, kids.
So we're still in the bathroom. And Sarah is like,
is somebody there? Hello? Hello, I'm naked. Is somebody there?
Anyway, Sarah's...
That's all I got.
Sarah's a dumb bitch, is what we're getting at. I think we're led to believe that the person in the showers was Reed because he's in the next part, but it's Chase, right?
Yeah, okay. It is. I mean, and if you know it's Chase and you're looking for it, you can tell that this, like, steam outline of his face is the actor that plays Chase.
Yeah.
But what... this sort of leads up to this little misdirect that the movie does for a while, where they want the viewer to believe that Reed is actually the villain,
yeah,
of the movie. And they put a little bit of effort into that, and it all starts here. Like, basically, Reed is creeping on Sarah. He's a magic sexual predator. So, ew.
All the scenes with the girls feel like they're supposed to be sexy, but they're just not. And I don't know if that's just because I'm super fucking gay, or like...
I mean, it might play a part in it, Phoenix. Yeah.
But I just didn't... there wasn't anything, like, that felt very, like, sensual to me.
But there are a lot of scenes of just those two in their dorm, just in their underwear. There's a lot of that going on.
All right, so after dumbass shower scene, Caleb wakes up in the middle of the night, all sweaty, except in 5 seconds, he will no longer be sweaty. I did notice that one. You know, because he misses Pogue, obviously. Because he just can't stop thinking about that motorcycle ride. The way he gripped his chest while sitting astride the back of that hog, accidentally, maybe caressing just a little. Yeah, anyway, so Caleb wakes up in the middle of the night because he can feel someone using the power.
The power.
And also because he was having a wet dream about Pogue. Or was that me?
I know that I've had several since watching this film. Yeah, but Reed takes Sarah back to the shower and he's like, there's no one even here, stupid. But, like, there's definitely someone there.
Okay, so the next day, and I think this movie takes place over, like, 3 or 4 days, by the way, which is just really quick for Caleb and Sarah to fall in love, but who am I judging? I just think it would make more sense if they were gay, but,
gays do move that quickly.
They do. They are 18 going on 27, though, so, like, they don't have a lot of time left.
That's true. Good point. So, we have a scene with Caleb driving in his car, and he calls Pogue to talk shit about Reed. And on that note, we have something really special for you guys.
Yeah, so we are going to be introducing a segment that has yet to be titled, but the working title is Masterpiece Theater, where we're going to do dramatic reenactments of some of our favorite scenes of what we're talking about. And this is the first installment of two in this episode, so you're welcome if you like it. Shut the fuck up if you don't. Drama. Talent. Suffering. This is a dramatic reenactment, and we are sorry. What makes you think it was Reed?
It's always him, but I've never felt it when one of us has used a power before. Have you?
No, I don't know. Maybe it's because you're so close to ascending.
IDK, maybe. I'm telling you, it was strong enough to wake me from a dead sleep.
You know he's only using to piss you off because he's so jealous.
I'm telling you. Jesus!
Crash! Explosion! Oh my gosh! Special effects! The car is not broken! It's repairing itself! Whoa!
Caleb! Caleb, pick up what's going on!
Thank God I have ambiguous magical powers and just saved myself from a fiery exploding death! I just saw Darkwing Duck!
Who would send you a dark fling?
IDK! But something is really not chill, RN. I can feel it.
Listen. We gotta talk to Jesse McCartney tonight. He'll probably be at the bar we aren't old enough to be at in the first place. I'll see you there.
Love you too.
Thank God that's over.
So beautiful.
What the fuck is a darkling?
You know, I got curious about this because I also really like mythology. So, a darkling is a creature that's referenced and used in this film a couple of times. So I did try to do some research and see, like, is there an actual creature in old myths that this is based on? And I couldn't find anything. The word darkling appears in a few fantasy novels, tabletop RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. And it's actually, the word is just being used in a Netflix show that came out this year called Shadow and Bone. But I couldn't find anything in, like, older myths at all. But in the stuff I did mention, it tends to be some sort of fey creature or cursed person, something that uses evil magic, blah, 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 basically what you would imagine when you hear the word darkling. The word darkling itself, etymologically, basically is just trying to tell you that it's a spawn of darkness or child of darkness. So yeah, that's all I really got for you on that. In the context of this film, a darkling seems to be a foreboding specter that takes the form of a dead person and is sent by a witch or warlock to intimidate their enemies. That's never explained in the film, by the way. That's just what I've put together from watching it several times. And so this darkling, which we will see again, has taken the form of the recently killed, unnamed dead kid. But basically, he just, like, show ups and screams and then fades away. That's just, like, that's his thing. Like... Which, like, after, like, a couple of times, is really just not scary anymore so much as annoying.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, it's just, like, he exists to just be, like, boo, and that's it.
Boom.
Boom.
Okay, so following our Oscar-worthy reenactment, we have a painfully awkward scene in town that, again, only serves the boring hetero subplot and to talk about the dead kid that no one knows the name of.
And so Caleb and Sarah, you know, hook up at the grocery store, and they're like, wow, we're both getting groceries. Would you like to hang out for the rest of the day?
He asks her to do errands, first of all. So he basically just says, hi, I know you're usually, like, shopping, but do you want to, like, go do chores with me? And she's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Stupid bitch.
Yeah, she's, like, soups into that. I would never have the confidence to be like that with someone and be like, I know you think that I'm hot, so do you want to take drugs out to my dad? But, like, Sarah's into it.
Yeah, she's just like, whatever, it's fine, I'll go. But we're in the car making our way through the leaves in the forest to take my very straight, not gay at all date to an abandoned house where my older for younger daddy lives. And to show you the barn in which you'll soon be held captive by my secret admirer. Like,
and Sarah's all like, oh my god, I love fucking leaves. And, like, I wish that I'd brought my camera because I'm really deep and into photography. And also it's 2006 and my phone can't take pictures. But, like, I just want you to know that I'm so deep that I would totally photograph a fucking tree.
I fucking love foliage.
You know, the further we get into this movie, the more I'm starting to realize what's going wrong. And it's written as if the viewer is more aware of what's going on than we actually are. Do you guys pick up on that at all? Like, it feels like it should be part of a sequel. It feels like we missed something and the story's just picking up in the middle.
Well, so I've watched it several times, and the first time I watched it was, like, over 10 years ago. I think I watched it right after it came out. So I do remember not fully understanding everything the first time, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you might have more of a place to speak on that than we do, because I've watched it so many times. We used to, like, watch it a lot in college.
I downloaded it illegally. Not even joking. I used to have this movie on my laptop for years.
You're this hardcore 12-year-old, drug-using, movie-pirating witch. What? Who the fuck are you?
I'm a fucking criminal.
Clearly.
We support you.
I swear, they'll let anybody on this show.
Yeah, I don't know. So I watched this movie. I've watched it previously. I knew what it was. Right, but I'd not watched it for a long time. And when I came back to it, when I first started watching it, I was like, holy fuck, this is great. You know, I was very into it. I was like, this is so much fun. These guys are so hot. And then as I started to watch it, like, to analyze it, I was like, oh my god, this sucks. Having to pick it apart just made me realize, like, how bad of a movie this is, and I will probably never watch it again after.
Oh, I so totally will. But this is exactly why getting into film studies ruins movies for you. Absolutely does.
And for everybody you hang out with.
Yeah, I love to ruin movies for everyone I hang out with.
David, that sounds like it's coming from personal experience.
A lot. Many movies. I thought I liked them. I didn't.
No, you didn't. Wrong. I had to tell you.
I was so wrong. Thank you, Siren.
You're welcome.
You bitch.
What happens here is Caleb and Sarah go out to this creepy old house, and this creepy old caretaker, like, fires a gun, and Sarah's like, Jesus Christ, like, I thought we were just, like, gonna go to Walgreens, but now there's a gun. And,
Caleb's just like, no, don't worry. That's just, like, this crazy guy who, like, lives here and takes care of the house. It's okay that he has a gun. It's totally fine. Anyway, I'm gonna go in. You stay here in this car, unprotected. Bye.
Okay. Yeah, so we don't know why Caleb has gone into the house at this point, but it's because he had to take drugs to his crusty old dad who lives in that house and isn't dead.
Is not dead. It is public knowledge that his father has passed away, but surprise, he's just old.
And surprise, it would be better if he was dead.
It would be so much better if he was dead. The aging thing, I just don't, I don't understand, like, where it's coming from.
Well, I mean, two places, which is the, like, tendency, especially in Western cultures, for us to have absolutely no respect for elders and a deep-seated fear of aging. We will do anything to keep ourselves youthful, or at least appearing youthful, even if it means buying a $36 jar of turnaround cream that don't turn around shit. And also, a complete misunderstanding of witchcraft's veneration for age and experience and wisdom. You know, the fear of being old and old people as the villain and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just, that's, you know, Hollywood is seeped in that sort of shit. So they were like, what's the worst possible thing that could happen from doing magic? What would scare the shit out of people? Getting old, especially when you think about it happening to these hot young twinks.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And their justification of this is, upon ascension, when you gain all this wonderful, amazing, fantastic, excellent power, it becomes your life force. And so using it all whimsically suddenly makes you die faster.
Or whatever.
Sounds gatekeepy to me. I'm not into it.
Yeah, pass on those stupid fucking rules.
Yeah, it's just... So this is actually something that I do take issue with, is when movies and shows about witchcraft have, like, a negative view of aging. Because that is just so contrary to, like, witchcraft's actual view on aging. Like... You know, a lot of traditions literally have the archetype of the crone, who represents age, wisdom, and power. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's an aspect of the goddess that is to be strived for. So when anything about witchcraft treats getting older like the worst thing that can happen to you, I'm just like, well, you clearly don't fucking understand anything about witchcraft.
Or they read a lot of Gerald Gardner.
Oh, or that, yeah.
Who was like, oh, hey, high priestess... I'm seeing some wrinkles. You may want to step down because Vanessica Hollywood over here wants to become the new high priestess.
Well, Gerald Gardner didn't have a problem with men aging. It was just women.
Mm. Yeah, fuck him.
Honestly, I don't think there are any Gardnerians that listen to this podcast, but even so, I mean, bye. yeah, it's not accurate. Here's the thing. I don't think that this is a witchcraft movie. I don't think this is a movie about witches. This is like X-Men meets Power Rangers meets Axe body spray. Like, I'm not... It's... Especially because the words that we would associate with witches, like magic or spells or things, like, they're not used. It's completely, like, glossed over. These are just boys with superpowers. They're not practicing anything, you know? They're just doing stuff.
They haven't done anything to attain this power. They have no respect for
exactly,
it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I would disagree. And I think it's a movie about witchcraft because it does a lot of things to set itself up as so. This movie was... allegedly, I'm assuming, geared toward, like, straight guys into action movies. And that's why they couldn't possibly call them witches, because, as, you know, we know from TERFs on the internet, only women are witches. So I really think that they... And I mean, there's, like, a lot of references to, like, the Salem witch trials and stuff like that.
I could do that in everyday conversation, and it still doesn't make the conversation about witchcraft.
Right, I get it. I just... Okay. For us... As educated witches, is this movie about witchcraft? No. But does, like, the mass public see it that way? I would say probably.
That I can agree with. That I'm inclined to agree with you, because this movie, especially when it came out, there wasn't really an understanding of witchcraft. I mean, beyond Charmed, which we're talking about, if you want to go back and listen to our other episodes after you finish this one. But, like, from, like, a watching it as a witch standpoint, there was nothing in it where I was like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. And knowing that there is other media out there that has at least attempted, even just to use the words witch or witchcraft or even warlock or whatever, kind of undermines this as a witchcraft movie for me.
Right. But again, I think it all comes back to the fact that it was about boys, that it was about men instead of women. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, any audience that they were going for with a thriller at that time would have seen them chanting and casting spells and picking out pretty gemstones and blending herbs and just been like, gay, even though that's what they ended up saying about the movie anyway.
Yeah.
And so, like, they were thinking about who they were marketing it to. How can we market witchcraft to a straight male action audience? Well, by being real subtle about it and not at all correct.
And not necessarily really subtle either. They had all these like glittering generalities that you would look for in something that would be, I guess, described as witchcraft. They've got a magic book. They've got powers. They fly or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've got New England.
They've got New England. Yeah.
Ipswich.
All right. So after creepy encounter with the abandoned house where Sarah just sits in the car, basically thinking to herself, what? Caleb comes back out. And, okay, I interpreted this as a dig, what he says to her. He gets back in the car and he's like, do you want to, like, shower or change clothes?
And she's like,
huh? She's like, what? And he's like, because we're going to this bar that we're not old enough to get into. And, like, I don't know, that just seemed like, that seemed like some shady straight guy comment.
You stink, like, and you look like trash.
Yeah, and don't you want to seek my validation, you little ugly whore?
And once we get to the bar, we find out, yes,
yeah. Yes, she does. Yes, she does. This is another one of those scenes where none of the fucking dialogue matches their mouths. Nothing they say in this entire scene lines up with the way their lips are moving. And remember, this movie isn't gay.
Yeah, and to prove that it's not gay, we have, I would say, what constitutes a sexual assault that happens in this bar scene. Yeah, yeah, so Pogue and Reed and Tyler are taking bets on what kind of underwear this waitress is wearing, and then Pogue uses his powers to lift up her skirt so they can see that she's not wearing any, and it's super, super gross, and I just hate thinking about how the writers were probably like, oh yeah, these guys are gonna love that, thinking about how if they had magic powers, they could lift up girls' skirts non-consensually. Bitch.
Ew.
That is the worst part of the movie, yeah, for me. The scene absolutely did not need to be there, served no purpose. They literally just thought that it was somehow cool, and it's not.
It's not. It's not.
Basically, it just seemed like, hey, we're toxic and horrible, really. So let's show you that. But also, relate to us because we're boys, huh? And we're straight.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah, boys will be boys, and we're sexual predators just like you.
We learn all about the swim team as Caleb and Pogue and Chaser playing the foosball.
Finally, something to look forward to. I do like a swim team.
Yeah, oh my god, I cannot wait.
Yeah, Siren's really into water sports.
You shut the fuck up, you nasty bitch. I don't even like you.
That was very good. That was very good. And, but Sarah is like, I'm not like other girls. And then proves that point by putting on a basic white girl song.
What did you say, David?
Songs that get white people turned.
Yes.
And Caleb's like, okay, fine, I'll dance, but I'm not moving my hips because that's gay. You know, they're dancing I Love Rock and Roll. And then we segue into a dude bro argument in the alley, and a grown man starts threatening a bunch of kids with a bat. That's cute. That's a good look.
Yeah, so we have to have this because the movie wants to misdirect us to think that Reed is the bad guy. And also because we have to have this toxic masculinity pissing contest, but this time with powers.
Ooh.
This is Act Two. We're sorry.
What were you thinking?
We were just playing them.
Yeah, come on, Caleb. They were suckers for it.
Why don't you quit being such a bussy?
I'm not finished with you yet. What will it take for you to get it? It's addictive, you moron. You've seen what it can do if you abuse it. You want that? That's your business. But if you use it in the open like you did tonight, you risk exposing all of us. That I won't let happen. My power is greater than yours!
Not until you ascend.
Stop it! This is scary!
Keep using like you did tonight, like you did last night. When you ascend, you'll be as good as dead!
So I fixed her car. Big deal!
Don't play me, Reed. I'm talking later and you know it.
The hell I do! I didn't use later.
Okay. Love you.
Scene.
Love you, bro.
Thank God that's over.
Okay, so after that horrific masculine display in the alley, we're back in the dorms. Sarah has a horrific nightmare about being attacked by a swarm of spiders, and it's the most repulsive thing ever.
Oh my god, I'm just, like, trying to sleep. Like, I have class in the morning. Oh my god. Spiders. Oh my god.
This scene gave me nightmares, only the spiders did not come out of my forehead. They came out of my ass. And I...
Ew!
I have never woken up wanting to douche more.
See, I would be afraid to douche after that. Be like, what if spiders came out?
Yeah, maybe just keep them up there where we can't see them.
Like, if you can't see them, they're not doing anything to you. But once you douche them out, then they're in your toilet, they're in your bathroom, everywhere.
Yeah, just everywhere.
It's their whole life overrun by spiders.
It was the worst dream I've ever experienced. Like, and just one of the many reasons that I will not be watching this movie ever again.
Yikes!
Yeah.
All right, so then we have a homoerotic, sweaty late-night call between Pogue and Caleb. They're both shirtless and sweating and talking to each other in their low, gravelly voices, wishing maybe they were in the same bed together, not on the phone, so they could talk about that dead kid. That's how I interpreted it.
I was very into that. Warm in here.
Poor.
Sarah looks up literally all of Caleb's family history the next morning for some reason. Odd thing to do over a guy you've been on one super awkward date with. That's one red flag for Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we are, like, halfway through the movie at this point, but, like, I mean, okay, so she met him two nights ago, and then they went on a date yesterday, and now she's like, okay, I had a dream about spiders, and it is clearly my new boyfriend, who I am, like, super diving into, like, right, just, like, super fast, like, we're meant to be, and, oh my god, he's a witch.
I think this does a lot to dispel that, like, air of stupidity that she's been maintaining the entire movie, because she's researching, she's in a library, there are books.
She knows how to read?
Like, so many books. She can read all the books at once because they're all fucking open.
She's a fucking speed reader.
No, see, that to me says that she doesn't really know how to read.
She was looking for pictures.
Because she has, like, five books open at once on the same table. It's like, that's not... No. One at a time.
Well, I mean, you know, she did transfer in from a public school.
Okay.
Maybe you just need to get on her level.
That's how they do it in the public. All right.
After that, finally! Naked boys!
Finally! The best scene.
I paused on the locker room. I paused on the locker room scene for a long time. For research.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was this, like, douchebag bully guy who's, like, been in the movie a little bit, but we didn't talk about him because I don't care.
Kira's boyfriend.
Yeah, Kira's boyfriend, who also has a name, but he's, like, a butthole, so nobody cares. Yeah, but in the locker room, so this, like, stupid douchey bully guy calls Chase a faggot. Oh my god. I mean, because that's, like, the worst possible thing that you can call anyone, and not, like, this, you know, just super fabulous title that I give myself all the time. So in response to being called a faggot, Chase makes fun of this guy's penis and then, like, punches him in the dick. And then all the warlock boys are like, cool. You're, like, so cool. You touched his penis. And then they all want to be friends. So I want to talk about how I think that Chase is queer-coded in
Please
this
do.
Movie. And I think this is part of it. So, you know, we hear him called a fag, and then there's some other gay stuff that happens. Spoilers! I know you did not see that coming. It seems like, okay, so queer-coding movie villains is another thing that goes on all the time. And it becomes pretty obvious if you think about the fact that nearly every Disney villain is a queer icon, because Disney has made almost all of their villains so incredibly gay in one way or another. I mean, let's talk about Scar from Lion King, okay? Like, he has a swishy walk and a lisp, okay?
And,
like,
a limp wrist.
Yeah, that lion is fucking gay. So, that obviously sends a really negative message, and it's subtle, so it's, you know, not always understood the way it's being absorbed by the audience. But basically, when you see stereotypically gay qualities, movies like this train people to think that gay people are bad when they see them exhibit the same qualities as movie villains. And so, like, so that's fucked up, and that's actually contributing to a social problem. So we see Chase kind of queerified in this movie, and it's really ironic because in addition to being a threat to the boys because he's a homo, he's also a threat to their girlfriends because he sexually predates on them. What the fuck?
So Chase is a gay queer.
It's the swim team and the gay queers.
So Pogue is all jealous because he wants to get dick down by Caleb, but now Chase is getting all Caleb's attention. So Pogue is like, ugh.
And then we segue into some, like, boring girl talk. And honestly, like, since expanding my gay circle, I literally have, like, zero interest in anything remotely associated with straight people. Or their relationships, or their problems, or, like, shut up. I don't care. You had a bad dream about spiders and your boyfriend wants to fuck all of his friends. Me too.
Yeah, no, seriously. Ooh. Girl, you're not special.
Yeah, no, that is pretty common. Like, whatever, honestly. Sarah got over at.
But later that night, Caleb sees the Darkling again just hanging out next to his bed so it can go boo when he wakes up.
Boom. Boom.
And then we get more swim team and some butts. And then Caleb hits his head in the pool because he sees Chase being a witch.
No, he hits his head because Chase makes him hit his head.
Oh,
that was like an attack. Okay, so Chase and Caleb are having like a swimming race because they're both freestyle. And, you know, Caleb's like the reigning like freestyle champ of this like school or whatever. And that's something that teenagers care about. So, but Chase is like, no, I'm going to be on the swim team too. Let's see who's better. And then they're swimming. And then Chase is like, what if I like magically attacked you and you hit your head on the pool wall, which would probably break your neck and kill you, quite honestly, at the speed that you did it at. But it's fine.
See, I told you Siren gets really into water sports. I was not lying.
Well, but here's the thing. Now, this might piggyback or go in a different direction than what you just said. I don't know. What are the odds that the other boy would have been on the swim team too? Are they witches or are they mermaids? I don't know.
The whole thing is manufactured to show off their bodies and to have some sort of display of testosterone in a homoerotic way where they can get everybody wet and one of them passes out and it's like this whole big thing. And then the subtext, like, who did they give him mouth to mouth? Like, Chase pulled him out of the water. Did he also put his lips on his? How did that feel?
We thought a lot about that.
I mean, it was a very critical, pivotal scene in the movie. So I just wanted to come correct for you, for the audience.
Yeah, David did this for us, Phoenix.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the work and the thought. I appreciate all of your input. That was absolutely accurate. This was the best scene in the movie, honestly.
For sure. For sure.
Later on in the evening, Pogue and Caleb go spy kidding to learn about Chase because his eyes were black as night. And we learn that Chase has ascended and is definitely a murderer.
Cute.
Yeah. I love that look for you.
Yeah. Actually, that is the kind of thing that I like in a man.
The ascended or the murderer?
Yes.
Which part?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's why we're best friends.
Yep. I know. Look at my best friend. He's this hardcore 12-year-old drug dealing, drug using, crack sniffing, crack smoking, meth manufacturing, illegal movie downloading, pirating witch.
I was going to say, you forgot I steal things.
And he steals. I just want to add to your rap sheet, like, every time.
That's fine. That's good.
Do any of us care about this school dance? Do we need to talk about the dance? Do we need to talk about...
Why even is the dance important? Like, they...
They don't even go.
Yeah, Chase is like, yo, meet me in that fucking barn or whatever. And then they're like, okay, but what about the dance? How gay?
Seriously. Because with everything going on, like, school dance, crucial.
Gays love a dance.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I do love a dance. Okay, I do.
Don't you want to dance? Don't you want to dance? Say you want to dance.
I do! So now that Pogue and Caleb have learned that Chase is a no-good murdering witch, like my best friend David, they get with the other guys, and they have a secret meeting in the basement of their four daddy's house, and So in the candle-ridden basement, they access, telekinetically, by the way, Caleb is such a hypocrite because he's all like, oh, don't use magic. It's, like, gonna kill us. Like, don't use magic, you guys. Anyway, I can't be bothered to walk over to this bookshelf to pick up this book with my hands. So I'm just gonna, like, Prue Halliwell it across the room.
It's exactly that.
What is it with telekinetics being hypocrites?
Well, when you're telekinetic, you make the rules.
Oh, okay. True. I was going to say, I don't think I would get up for anything.
Ever. For sure. Like,
think about Matilda. Would she reach across the room for a book? No.
No, I mean, I was just thinking about how often I use DoorDash already. So, like, if I didn't even have to get up off the couch. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I need to order McDonald's.
I get it.
Can we talk about their spell book now?
Yes.
The Book of Damnation. What the fuck?
Yeah. It's kind of the Book of Shadows of the movie, except it's only really in this one scene, and it doesn't seem to contain spells so much as historical information.
It looks like it's just a name of, like, the people that had been accused.
Yeah, well, it's got, like, records of, like, their families, basically, of the five witch warlock families.
It's a vehicle for exposition and to move the plot forward, that's it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not even mentioned more than twice. And this is the only scene where they call their powers magic. The only time in the entire movie where they say the word magic at all. And so I think they're talking about in this scene before Pogue crashes his motorcycle, Chase using a spell on Kate, doing the spell with the spider. And they call it a creation spell. And that's the only time they call something a spell in the movie as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious your thoughts about it.
I mean, I still just cut it to, like they wanted it to be about witchcraft, but they didn't, you know? So they would use words like magic and spell sparingly, but not actually show either of those things happening.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like, we had spoken briefly about, like, spectral attack.
Oh, well, okay, yeah. So what they're getting at here is, with, like, Sarah's dream about the spiders and the fact that Kate is now, like, getting sick in the hospital and is, like, covered in spider bites or whatever, which, you know, we didn't tell you about, but that's what's happening. Yeah, so I think it just harkens back to, like, this idea from the Salem witch trials that witches had familiars and they could send them in spectral attack on their enemies. And, like, I mean, so arachnophobia is obviously being used here to make the movie kind of scary. And again, that's just, like, sort of so cliche at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I don't especially like spiders or anything. But, like, I don't know. I just think, like, arachnophobia and, like, witches sticking spiders on people is just kind of tired.
I can handle small spiders. Not a huge fan of big spiders.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually what's sort of funny about this movie is that it's all small spiders, which is not typically the way they would go. No. And all the spiders are CGI, too. So they could have looked like anything.
Yeah, they could have been anything. If I can, like, see all of its eyeballs and its, like, fangs and stuff, I'm not into it. Like, tarantulas are not my thing.
See, I find big spiders less intimidating because it's not like they can just disappear on me like that fucker that may or may not still live in my bathroom.
I think that adds to the ominous effect of it, though. Like, a bunch of little spiders, a subtle attack, sort of like a pinpoint assassination kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not like an overt, overly masculine attack, but like a really feminine, gay, bitchy, petty
spider. You know? There are going to be so many, and you're not going to be able to find them.
Oh my fucking God, spiders. You know? And I think when Sarah was looking through pictures, researching at the library, because obviously she wasn't reading because she comes from a public school because she's poor. there were pictures of spiders. And I think that if you look at it closely, I think it does reference a familiar. So it does kind of come back to that. Like, you have to look for it, which I was, because I was reading.
Yeah, no, you're correct. Sarah's books do talk about spiders being used as a witchcraft attack. They did. No.
And saying something like a creation spell is just vague enough to be like, witchcraft? Maybe? Just a hint of it on the wind?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know?
Just a little tiny dash of witchcraft.
Yeah, just a taste.
Just a spritz.
Just a taste. Just one bump of witchcraft, right? And it's free. But the next one, it's going to cost you your fucking face, all right? You're going to look ugly. You're going to grow old. You're going to be Bob Barker. Right? Without the fucking TV show.
Without, oh God, Bob Barker without The Price of Right is just a fucking old guy shouting numbers.
Precisely. Living in an old shack where his son brings a medication and he lives with a crazy guy with a gun. You know? Bob Barker.
Right. So Pogue doesn't so much get into a bike accident as he goes after Chase, and Chase kicks the shit out of him with magic.
Yeah.
Just to clarify that part. And it's because Pogue is mad because Kate has been attacked by Chase, and so he's got to do the boyfriend thing and go get revenge.
Oh, yeah, because Pogue is dating Kate, not Caleb, in case we're unclear, because we've been kind of all over the place.
And Kate, the plot device, has been injured. And so, yes. Because Kate belongs to Pogue, Pogue has to go fight the other boy who took his toy.
Correct.
God damn it, I didn't keep my receipt for this girlfriend. I have to take care of her.
I was gonna trade her in for something else, but fuck. Not in this condition. God damn it.
After all of this happens, Caleb is like, better go check on my blonde protagonist. And there is a magic fight in her dorm between Caleb and Chase that is essentially them fucking. So,
kind of. But let's talk about what goes on with Sarah here. She's like immediately like put to sleep and just left on the bed. You know, like she's like there and then just immediately, effortlessly, she's reduced to a victim. She's not conscious. She's this thing that Chase is dangling in front of Caleb, like, do what I say or I'll fucking hurt her. This girl that you met 3 days ago.
And everyone in the audience is like, do it!
And then she was acted on before that, actually. So when Caleb first shows up, we think it's Caleb. It's actually Chase in disguise. So he uses his power to gain access to her room, which is just a violation. And then when real Caleb shows up, it's like, oh, gotcha, I'm Chase. Also, that girl is unconscious.
Yeah, so he kind of roofies her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. Oh,
yeah, that is really gross. That is really gross. I didn't, like I said, a lot of the scenes that she was in, I just didn't really care about.
Yeah, well, this scene really proves my point that Chase is both queer-coded, but also presented as a threat to your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Because he breaks into her room, roofies her, threatens her, attacks her in the ear with a spider, ew, and then he starts telekinetically batting Caleb around the room, which, I mean, actually looked pretty great. I enjoyed this fight scene. I did. I think telekinesis is fucking cool, and I'm really mad that I don't have it. But let's talk about the end of this scene. So Chase is basically like, basically, you're going to will me all your power, or I'll kill your whole family. And Caleb's like, I'm never going to let that happen. And then Chase knocks Caleb on his ass, basically mounts and gets on top of him, and then kisses him on the face and calls him brother.
And I have never related to a villain more than in this scene. Because if I were going to play a witch villain, not that I ever have in life, but if I were, it would be because I want more power and I want to kiss the boy. And I want that stupid fucking girl out of here. Just like, listen, Caleb, she's ruining your life. She's a female. She has no place being romantically involved with a boy. She needs to, like, clear her plate so she can, like, run the country. You and I need to fuck. Also, I need your magic because I have an addiction.
Wow.
But enough about me.
Man, someone called TLC.
Yeah. Cut, print, take it to series.
Barn fight! Barn fight! Barn fight! Barn fight! We get a barn fight.
So there's more bullshit, but basically to fast track you through that, Chase kidnaps Sarah again. It's like all Chase 4. And then Caleb goes to confront him alone on the night that he's supposed to ascend and become all powerful and shit. Even though Reed and Tyler could have gone with him, they were entrusted to protect Sarah, which they failed at entirely, and then they are just not in the movie anymore.
Yeah, that's it.
And I do want to take a moment at this point to say that Tyler serves absolutely no purpose as a character at all. He is literally just there so there would be four of them.
Yeah.
He goes to the dance with Reed, and they stay together. They slow dance through the night because Sarah's fucking gone. You know?
Okay. All right. No, back on board with Tyler. Yeah. Anyway, so Caleb goes alone to the barn to fight with Chase while Sarah literally hangs there in the air as a threat, basically. You know, just, mm-hmm. I'll kill her if you don't do what I want. I do want to say, though, that, like, the scenes where Sarah is, like, floating in the air and her, like, dress is rippling and her hair is waving and there's, like, fire around her, I think are, like, really pretty.
She's a really pretty trophy.
Yeah, but I also want to say... Oh, my God! I also want to say that in most of this scene, Sarah is not so much... the actress, as she is a bundle of sheets.
Which, honestly, I know, again, we're super happy they got work, but, like, Sarah could have just been a bundle of sheets the whole time. And the movie would have been better.
Correct.
Like, ooh, this is my love interest. It's my sheets. They're Egyptian cotton. They were knitted by blind nuns.
I got her at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, yep. I mean, that's the episode description right there.
This is my better as a bundle of sheets.
is that the title?
I don't know, but it's up there. It's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. So we get a bunch of cheesy dialogue that's supposed to be like witty banter, but it's not.
Oh, so great though.
It's fun to watch. It really is fun to watch. I was just like, so I watched this movie once and I was like, oh my God, I love it. I watched this movie again and I was like, this is really bad. And then I watched it a third time and a fourth time. And by the time I was done with the outline, I was like, ooh, witchy.
Okay, the dialogue is pretty bad. But I still never get tired of this ending scene because I just think that it is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. It's like, I mean, it's like a big, long, kind of epic magic fight scene. And
sort of.
For capping off the movie, this movie, it's pretty good.
It's sort of like they're magical soccer players, just sort of like punching at each other.
Well, yeah. It's like, a little bit that.
Cute. Like, I would do something else a little more original, but like, if you want to play soccer, because that's like your frame of reference, because you're straight or whatever, and that's really boring, and you go to prep school, I get it.
Is soccer a straight thing?
I don't know.
The only videos about soccer that I watch are gay porn.
It's the only sport I know, okay.
And also, She's the Man. So, I don't know.
I think the fact that it's the only sport you know makes it gay, right?
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's more queer coding.
I didn't say that I could play soccer. Please nobody interpret it that way.
Oh, no, we are not football players here. Mm-mm. But the special effects are pretty good. Initially in my notes, I wrote that they were bad, but they're not. They're not bad. For 2006 being this big old magic fight, it's not bad. It's just I just wish this movie was better.
Yeah.
I wish this movie was better.
Yeah, I agree.
Instead of like at the end, them just tossing their sticky witch jizz at each other. Because that was the ending I was anticipating.
Oh my God.
And I got it. And of course, there's some sort of intervention by some inconsequential woman who was all like, oh, hi, I'm Caleb's mom. So I'm gonna go to like my husband's house because he's like fucking dying. Anyway, I don't be like, yo, you never did anything for me or your son. You're fucking selfish. I've never had an orgasm. Anyway, fucking give him your power. You fuck. Also, where's the gin? Because I'm thirsty. And then Caleb's dad's like, I wish you my power or whatever. And then Caleb wins the fight.
Caleb wins the fight with his daddy's power.
Dad magic. Daddy power.
Yeah, that was Brill. Mm. I love you as Caleb's mom. I love her.
I love me as Caleb's mom.
I would have enjoyed the character more if David.
I wish I would have been Caleb's mom.
Seriously, you should have been cast in that role.
I was like five.
They really fucked up. So you could have done it at five. You were a functional alcoholic at 12.
Do we have any other thoughts about this before we segue into the end of the episode?
So I think that the ending is Okay. I think that the scene of the ending is pretty good, but I think the ending overall is terrible, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. So, like, okay, so after Caleb's mom convinces his dad to give up his power, we never see either of them again. We never see Tyler and Reed again. We just have to assume that they slow danced the night away. And we only see Pogue and Kate again recovering in the hospital, which, by the way, doesn't make any sense. It makes perfect sense that Kate would recover after Chase is defeated, but Pogue was in a motorcycle accident, so it doesn't really make any sense.
No.
None whatsoever. Yeah, so there's just, like, all these characters who really just were barely important and supporting characters to Caleb, more or less. And I would even say that Sarah is a supporting character to Caleb, even though she's supposed to be the female lead.
No, she's a bundle of sheets.
Yeah, you could replace her with a bundle of sheets and nobody would notice through the entire climax of the film. That's not hyperbole. That happened.
I felt like the ending was actually quite ominous, honestly. I took it to a darker place. So there they are. This Caleb has just defeated his arch-gay enemy. He's defeated his queerness, essentially. He's going to ride off into the wilderness with this girl at his side. And the very first thing he does after he ascends is uses magic to fix his car windshield. The most petty thing, the thing he said you shouldn't do, in full public view of a whole bunch of first responders. And then he just sort of dries off. Like, this is the beginning of his, like, Uber addiction. 2 weeks later, you find him in a fucking old folks home.
Yeah. No, I completely 100% agree with that take. That's the way I took it, too. I didn't like the part where, like, all the other characters were left out because they obviously weren't important. I just felt like that was very sloppy and lazy. But what you said is absolutely true. I feel like the ending with Caleb using magic wantonly, pettily, and driving off with Sarah is basically saying that he's about to live an exact echo of his dad's life. And one day, Sarah will be the drunk mom.
Oh my god, if there is a sequel.
Isn't there a sequel?
No, there is not. I feel like they left it open for one. I feel like they wanted there to be one because you never find Chase's body. Chase is not, like, there and, like, for sure dead or anything, which means he probably got away.
So, David Dakota, if you're listening, I'm gonna need you to pick this up, all right? You're still renting that mansion on that mountain or whatever. You're 1313. Come on, pick it up. The Covenant, part two.
1313.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's just not a good movie, and I wish it were. I wish it were good, because I want to like it. The first time I watched it, I was like, I hate and love this at the same time, but now I just don't like it anymore. Like,
it had such great potential, and it really just wasted it, trying to fit into, like, hetero, cis, normative American expectations of action movies.
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
And really the only reason that it is good at all is because there's quote-unquote magic in it. I mean, otherwise, we probably wouldn't care about it at all.
No, imagine if that were just a movie about people that didn't like each other.
Yeah, or like high schoolers with guns or something.
Hot prep school kids have a feud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cruel Intentions without Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah.
Except she was interesting.
Yeah.
Suck on that, other Sarah.
Yeah. Do we have a kill of the day?
So, I would nominate for Kill of the Day, the dead kid. We didn't see him die, but your death was everywhere in the movie. So thank you for that, dead kid.
Thanks, dead kid number one.
Yeah, iconic. You. I mean, his name was literally dead kid. So, like, iconic.
I feel like I want my Kill of the Day to be the sequel that never was. That didn't happen.
Who else died? Except for Chase's parents.
Yeah, nobody really.
I forgot about them.
Except for Caleb's dad. He killed himself, right?
I think my kill of the day would be Caleb's mom's glass of whiskey. She drained that bitch dry, and I'm proud of her.
She killed it multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flawless victory.
Their trophies are in the mail. Kill of the day.
So, David, if you had to rate this movie, what would you give it?
I would probably rate it, like, 1.5 swimming pools.
Okay.
Swimming pools are big. Okay. That's a lot of points. But also, like, not that great. Not like an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Like, I don't know, an above-ground pool.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's some shade right there.
Yeah. Shade, but also nonsensical.
I mean,
that's my girl.
Aren't all of our readings nonsensical? I think my rating for this film... Let's see, how many boys are there? I give it all of the swim team. Just several boys in Speedos, some of them not wearing clothing. Just, yeah, that's my rating system.
At least four exposed butts.
For sure. If I had to rate this movie, I would probably go with a whopping 0 stars for thwarted, unexpressed, unfulfilled gay lovemaking scenes. But a 10 out of 10 in scenes that I finish in my mind.
David, do you want the people to find you? Do you want to plug yourself?
I don't really have anything going on, so if you want to find me, just try.
David has no web presence.
Oh, that was good. Okay, Siren, where can the people find you?
Yeah, so you can follow my Facebook page, Siren Spectacular, non-binary meme witch. You can also follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular, or you can watch David and I's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. Yes, I changed my handle again. I can't decide what kind of brand I'm going for.
You're gonna go for the brand that no one can fucking find, sweet pea.
Well, just search my name on all social media platforms. You should be able to find me. I'm one of the only ones. Follow me on Twitter at @PhoenixArcana_. Don't add me on Facebook because I'm getting a little overwhelmed with all of the gay men adding me on Facebook.
Yeah, overwhelmed. Sure.
Yes, I'm over encumbered.
Overburdened.
With
dick.
Oh, God. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast across the board. If you have a question or anything you'd like to hear us talk about, feel free to send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com.
All right. Until next time, you closeted magic twinks.
Keep on witching.
And bitching.
Bye.
How about I make you my wiatch?